Hello, and welcome to the Jubilee Church Podcast. Jubilee Church exists to help all people know God, find family, discover purpose, and make a difference. If you would like to learn more or connect with us, please visit our website at jubileestl.org. Well, good morning, Jubilee family. It really is such a privilege to be able to serve us by bringing the word. This family means so much to me, and I genuinely wouldn't be where I'm at today with you. So just thank you for being a part of this family. And like Brian mentioned, this month I just passed 1 year of being on staff. And before that, I worked in finance, which, if you know much about me, is pretty humorous. My degree in college was media communications, and never thought I would do finance. But in that job, our team was the most successful when we were efficient planners and strategic investors. It was our job to make the most of our clients' assets in order to help them accomplish their goals. And when we read today's passage, it can be easy to maybe interpret it in a similar way. It can make sense for us to read it and think, okay, yeah, the man would be pleased with the first two servants because they made good business decisions. They made him a profit. And he should be mad at this third guy because he was lazy. And he didn't even let what he gave him gain interest. But is this the message that Jesus is wanting to communicate? Is that his point? Let's jump into the text together and find out. We, like Brian said, we're continuing in our Matthew series in Matthew 25. We're starting at verse 14. And for context, Jesus is speaking just to his disciples at the Mount of Olives. And he has been speaking to them since the beginning of Matthew 24. And he is telling this story to prepare them for what's ahead, which is his death on the cross, his resurrection, and his second coming. So here we are in Matthew. For it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted to them his property. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability. Then he went away. So while this parable may be a little abstract to us, it actually mirrors real events that would have been known by his audience, the disciples. And not just once, but twice. The first local ruler left town and successfully convinced Caesar to endorse him and expand his power. The second guy, not so successful. He failed and lost everything. And the thing is, when the master departed, neither of the ruler's servants knew if he was going to come back at all, let alone successful. And when things didn't pan out very well for the second guy, his servants didn't fare well either. But ultimately, Jesus is pointing to himself. And he is providing us with his standard of loyalty. While I'm away, will you remain faithfully committed to me by carrying on my work until I return? Or will you decide to protect yourself and your reputation just in case I fail? So the question is, which type of man is this master in the parable? Because depending on who his servants believe him to be determines how they use the gift he gave them while he's gone. And the question is the same for us. Is Jesus really king? Did he really defeat Satan, sin, and death? Is he gone? Or is he really coming back? Because depending on who we believe him to be determines how we live until he comes back. But what are the servants supposed to do while their master is gone? Let's continue to read. He who had received the 5 talents went at once and traded with them, and he made 5 talents more. So also he who had received the 2 talents made 2 talents more. But he who had received the 1 talent went and dug it in the ground and hid his master's money. In the Luke account of this parable, in Luke 19, it says, engage in business until I come. And the original Greek word used here is en ho, which means engage in trade until I return. So by using the phrase en ho, he's actually answering the question of which type of man he is by essentially saying, engage in trade because I'm coming back. It's just up to the servants if they believe him. And it's important to note that what the master gave his servants before he left was not wages he owed them. It wasn't like a final paycheck. It was a free gift from the master to his servants to use wisely. And some commentators believe that these talents represent faith, hope, love, all essential parts of the free gift of salvation we have received through Jesus. And like any person in power, they have some followers. But they also inevitably have some people who oppose them. So by showing allegiance to one man, you would inevitably be inviting the attention as well as the ridicule of those who did not want to see your guy in power. So the master again wants to know, are you willing to openly engage in trade with the free gifts I have given you, declaring yourselves loyal to me during my absence when many may oppose you because of your connection to me? Because who was represented in their trading was pointing to who they were faithful to and saying, his future is my future. In the same way, Jesus is inviting us to be faithful with what he has given us, no matter how long it is until he comes back, and no matter how bleak things may appear. Because when the man does come back victorious with the evidence of his successful kingdom obtained, it's going to be easy to be like, yeah, that was my guy. I never questioned it for a second. I knew he was going to come back with the win all along. But it would take the master a moment to look at the books and see the truth. How would the master feel when he comes back and sees his servant successfully engaging in trade, but with no connection to him? He sees his servant having opened a successful business, but it's named after themselves. Or someone else. And Jesus is inviting his disciples, and he is inviting us to look at his second coming this way. So what do the first two servants do? Let's keep reading. Now, after a long time, the master of those servants came and settled accounts with them. And he who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 talents more, saying, Master, you delivered to me 5 talents. Here I have made 5 talents more. His master said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. And he also, who had 2 talents, came forward saying, Master, you have delivered to me 2 talents. Here I have made 2 talents more. His master said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of the master. So the first servant, it says, he went and traded at once with what he had been given. He acted without hesitation. And the second, following his lead, also acted without hesitation, despite receiving less than the first. And though they were given different amounts, they both produced a profit equal to what they had been given. And this is what is incredible. Get this. The master gave them the exact same response. He said, well done, good and profitable. No. Well done, good and business-minded. No, he says, well done, good and faithful servant. what type of master they believed him to be influenced how they used his gift. Both knew the master was who he said he was, that he was going to do what he said he was going to do. So they used all of it. They used all that they had and faithfully engaged in trade because they knew he was coming back. And this verse has caused me to get a little bit of the wrong idea of what's happening. Like, you were faithful over a little. So with my imagination, I picture this like rustic coin, like a little brown sack in Robin Hood or something, where the master is, you know, handing out coins one at a time until they run out. But what is a talent then? A talent is a unit of monetary value equivalent to 20 years of wages. So average income, you know, $50,000 a year, you're looking at $1 million. Is that amazing? That blows my mind. So let that soak in. One talent is 2 decades worth of pay. And that's just one. That was the least amount that was handed out by the master. So 1 talent, 1 million. 2 talents, 2 million. 5 talents, 5 million. And listen to what the master's response is about what he gave them. You were faithful over a little. What? Are you tracking with me? A little? That blows my mind. I imagine that there's not a person in this room whose life would not be changed by $1 million. And if yours would not be, may I interest you in donating to the Alyssa McCutcheon Travel Fund? Just throwing that out there. When we do not know the giver, we undervalue the gift. And an undervalued gift gets underused. When we do not know the giver, we undervalue the gift. And an undervalued gift gets underused. On Christmas, when I see a gift or a card from my grandma, I know it's going to be good. She never deviates from the list, so I know the gift is going to be in line with what I asked for. And there's going to be money in that card. I know it. I'm already thinking about how I'm going to spend it. I never lack excitement for a gift from my grandmom, because I know my grandmom. And she's incredibly generous. And she loves to give good gifts. And I don't know if you've seen those videos of the kids who open the card and then they just pretend to not see the cash fall to the floor. Like, dear, Merry Christmas, Alyssa. Oh my gosh, there's cash in here? I had no idea. Thank you. Thank you, Grandma. But what does the master's response say about him? If $5 million is only a portion of his property, if it's only a little, what more of an incredible abundance of gifts does he have to give? Now, because of your faithfulness, I will set you over much. If nearly $5 million is a little, what is considered much? And though this is a parable, it helps me to kind of picture what's happening here. So let's say I'm one of the servants. He lines this up. He gets to the first guy, and he gives him 5 talents. And I'm like, yeah, sweet. We're all getting 5 talents. Okay. He gets to the one next to me, and he gets 2. I'm getting a little panicky. This is going the wrong direction. I knew I should have stood on the other side. And he gets to me, and I get 1. 1? I get 1, and he got 5? What did I do to get the short stick? Do you ever feel that way about the gifts that God's given you? Do you take your eyes off of the giver and look what's in your hands, where you work, what you earn, your abilities, and compare it to those around you. Because unlike the first two servants, the third buried what he was given. So let's take a look at the dialogue with this third servant. He also, who had received the one talent, came forward, saying, "Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow, and gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here, you have what's yours." So the difference between the third servant and the first two is that he claims he didn't use what he was given because he knew who the master was. He's confident. Well, let's keep reading. "But his master answered him, 'You wicked and slothful servant, you knew that I reap where I did not sow and gathered where I scattered no seed?'" See, the master is asking a question to draw out what is in the servant's heart. That if you really knew me, then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and at my coming, I should have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to him who has 10 talents. For everyone who has will more be given, and he will have an abundance. But the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away." So the servant's defense isn't really adding up. If he knew his master to be a hard man, reaping where he did not sow, why did he bury it? Now he is telling the truth. He is afraid, but he's not afraid of what he's claiming to be afraid of. The first two servants knew their master was who he said he was. That he was going to do what he said he was going to do. The third servant was afraid he wasn't. That he wasn't going to do what he said he was going to do. And he didn't want to be found rooting for the wrong guy, if he even came back. Nor did he want to endure the ridicule of being loyal to a man with no power. Also, if you got caught having messed up with something of high value that was given to you, wouldn't you be pretty apologetic? I sure would be. But because he did not know who his master was, what he thought was a compliment actually was a huge insult. There was a group of raiders that had a reputation for their ability to not have to work their land, that they could go and take with force what they wanted from others. And the third servant was treating his master like that. The people in Jerusalem thought the Messiah was going to come back as this conquering military leader who would have great success and take over. But those who knew Jesus knew that wasn't true. And the temptation at times of uncertainty and stress, it's to keep what you have, hold it close, hide it away, and just see how things pan out. The master's point, which is Jesus's point, is that he wasn't focused on how much was given. He was focused on what his people did with it. Because even the one who got the least got so much. To us who feel in this room that we have not been given much, to know Jesus and have a relationship with him is more than we could ever possibly need. And seeing Jesus for really who he is and remaining faithful to him, something we need help with. I need help with this. Jesus tells his disciple in John 16, it says, "It is to your advantage that I go away. For if I do not go, the helper will not come. When Jesus rose from the dead after his crucifixion and was about to go back into heaven, he says, someone even closer than me in the flesh is coming. So though my physical body is leaving, I promise I'm not going to leave you alone. We have an incredible helper in the person of the Holy Spirit. And David gives his testimony in Psalm 16. I'm going to read from the New Living Translation. It says, I know the Lord is always with me. I will not be shaken, for he is right beside me. No wonder my heart is glad and I rejoice. My body rests in safety, for you will not leave my soul among the dead or allow your Holy One to rot in the grave. You will show me the way of life, granting me the joy of your presence and the pleasures of living with you forever. Jesus doesn't expect us to engage in trade, sharing the gospel, using our God-given talents, our finances, our relationships, all out of our own ability to steward them well. He first and foremost gives us himself through the person of the Holy Spirit. And he also gives us his family, the church. That's us. And as the church, we want to help you. I want to help you. Like Brian mentioned, Growth Track is just in 2 weeks. And if you're new with us, man, can I just say good things happen in Growth Track. That God reveals his design for you, how he has specifically made you for a purpose and to make a difference. If you're not yet in a community group, oh, this is where the life of the church happens, where we know needs and we're able to point each other to Jesus, where there's real life on life. There's a place just waiting for you to step in and be a part. If you're a part of a community group and aren't sure how God has uniquely made you, how that fits into his kingdom and his plan, can I encourage you to talk to your community group leaders this week? Invite them to pray for you. I guarantee they see gifting in you, that they want to give you an opportunity to step forward and use. Because Jesus equips those he's called. And if you're wondering who that is, that is you. That is us. So therefore, he has equipped us with gifts according to his perfect wisdom and how he knows you and how he's made you to have purpose and to bring him glory. So for us who know Jesus, we are to wait with excitement about his return. No matter how long, no matter how difficult, because we know which type of master he is. That he is the one true king who is coming back, and he's coming back victorious. Yet if we're honest with ourselves, if I'm honest with myself, the more challenges I face, the longer things take, the more disappointments I experience, thoughts of doubt creep in. If Jesus was really generous, he would have given me that gift. He would have done this thing that I have been waiting for so long. He would have done it by now. I don't know if it's worth risking it all. So I'm going to take what I have, bury it, and try to preserve it. But here Jesus is inviting us to do the exact opposite. To hold nothing back, seeing him for who he really is, because we want to be found with his name evident in every area of our lives. And his word says that he's coming back soon. But if I look at my daily life, I don't always live this way. It's not always a reality for me. I tend to still live as if it's far off. I'll get to it. But like Brian said last week, the truth is, we don't know We don't know when he's coming back. We don't know the day or the hour. Only God knows. But we're invited to be faithful. But I say things like, I'll share the gospel when the moment is just right. This wasn't the right moment. When I have all the right words and I won't look silly. I'll bury this free gift of salvation that I've been given to share with others until later. Aren't you glad the disciples did not bury the gifts that they had been given? That they used all that they had for the sake of the gospel? But even more than the disciples, aren't you so glad that Jesus held nothing back when he went to the cross? I'm so thankful that Jesus' faithfulness to us is not dependent on our faithfulness to him. Jesus' free gift of salvation rests solely on his demonstration of love on the cross, where he willingly went and died for you and for me so that we could be a part of this kingdom that he's coming back with. And he invites us now in the waiting to be faithful with all he has given us because he's coming back. So why are we faithful? Just to make sure we stay on his good side so he doesn't call us slothful. No, it says there's joy. Enter the joy of the master. There is joy in being about what Jesus is about. Jesus is about an eternal kingdom where all are welcome who call on the name of the Lord. There's joy in eagerly expecting his return because he's coming back. And he's coming back victorious with an eternal kingdom for us. So what is keeping you from investing all that you have? How has your view of Jesus, what you know about him, how has that influenced using the gifts that he's given you? Maybe you don't know what those gifts are, or maybe you do, and I don't know how this fits in with the kingdom. How would God use what I have? In Growth Track, we talk about three areas of giving. We're called to give of our time, her talents, and her treasure. And if we were to honestly look at how we are using those things currently in our lives, who would they point to? We want to be joyfully generous with all that he has given us because who we believe him to be determines what we do until he comes back. So can I invite us to not leave today without receiving prayer, inviting others to help us see the gifts that God has given us because he's a good giver. He's a generous giver. Check that box on the Connect card to go to Growth Track, to discover your purpose, to make a difference. Check that box to jump into a community group. Hold nothing back. Come all in. Because there is a rich abundance with Jesus and his family. Let's invite the Holy Spirit to speak to us about how we are to be faithful with all that he's given us. Because he's coming back. And that's a good thing. Can we stand together?